Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Yudave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So we are going to read through these prayers of Queen Kunti. And let me just, if you just bear with me 1 second. Okay. On this 22nd day of December 2012 in Chicago, we're reading from the prayers of Queen Kunti. And before we do, we should chant our invocation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Now, what I want to do is we're going to read these and we'll be able to chant them together. And then I'll read the translation and a little summary of the purport. So we'll get the whole sweep of these. And I request you, if you have some questions, we may have time at the end, we can discuss some of the more salient points. I thought we'd get a chance to see how these prayers actually flow, the beautiful Sanskrit and English. So we'll just read, you can join me in the Sanskrit, I'll chant, you chant. Kunti uvacha, namasye purusham tvadyam, ishwaram prakate param, alakshyam savabhutanam, antar bahiravastitam. Srimati Kunti said, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. So in Srila Prabhupada's purport, Kunti begins with obeisances, namaha, and the last words of her last prayers are namaste also. So there's a very nice symmetry you'll see at the end. Thus she recognizes Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet still she has affectionate motherly feelings for him, just like Devaki, who also understood his divinity. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada speaks of Kunti's puzzlement as to whether Krishna is localized, simply her nephew standing before her, or all-pervading. In this, she echoes the achintya quality in the achintya-bheda-bheda philosophy. Achintya-bheda-bheda means simultaneously one and different. So Krishna often displays this contradictory nature, and this will come out later. He is simultaneously before her as her nephew and within everything as the supersoul. But he is more. He is always affectionate to his devotees. As she just witnessed, Krishna entered the womb of Uttara and saved her embryo, the future King Parikshit. And Kunti has also experienced Krishna's protection personally in the whole history, leading up to and including the Battle of Kurukshetra. He is all great constitutionally, but for his dear devotees, he is all loving and ever their protector. And indeed, that is the most attractive part of his greatness. To his devotees, he is always visible within, and sometimes without. But to the non-devotees, he covers himself, as described in the next verse. Maya javanikachannam agyadhokshajam avyayam nalakshise mudadusha Nato na chadaroyata. Being beyond the range of a limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, maybe some of you know this verse, Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrata. Mudhoyam nabijanati lokomam ajamabhiyam. Krishna says, I am never manifest to the foolish and the unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. The same word avyayam is used in Kunti's prayer. Infallible, irreproachable, never diminishing. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada gives many reasons why one should accept Krishna as the Supreme. Number one, his wonderful acts that only God could perform, such as those of Ram, Nrisimha, Varaha, or his original form of Krishna. He killed Putana as a baby. He lifted Govardhan Hill as a boy, lifts a frog's umbrella. That's the mushroom. These aren't just tall tales, but are recounted in the Puranas, the Itihasas, and the Upanishads. Number two, he gives wonderful instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. Number three, quote, he has shown marvelous capacities as a hero, as a householder, as a teacher, and as a renouncer. And number four, he is accepted as God by all the great acharyas, Vyas, Devala, Asita, Narada, Madhva, Shankara, Ramanuja, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and all other authorities in the line. This is from the purport. Yet despite all of these reasons, the asuras refuse to accept Krishna as God due to ignorance and obstinacy born of previous misdeeds. Relying solely on what knowledge can be gleaned from their senses and mind, such unfortunate souls deride Krishna and even the very idea of God. Krishna is adhokshaja, as Kunti says here, and can thus never be understood by the ascending process of knowledge. Now, this word adhokshaja is very significant. It's made up of three words, adha, aksha, ja. Now, aksha, ja means knowledge born from the eyes or the other senses. In other words, the ascending knowledge, the scientific method. But adha means down. In other words, Krishna pushes that knowledge down. He is transcendental to that knowledge. He's beyond the senses and the mind. This is the idea. So since he's at Hokshita, those who simply rely on the senses of the mind can never know him. For the innocent but ignorant, however, Krishna arranges for temples where they can visit, see the Lord in his archa-vigraha, such as here, and hear about him from enlightened souls. Thus, temples are essential to spread Krishna consciousness widely among the present population of Kali Yuga. Especially in this age, people are completely absorbed in this scientific knowledge, technology, and they have little faith in what they cannot see or hear or sense. So these temples in which God appears in the Archa-Vigraha form, and also a place where devotees speak about Krishna, are essential, and that's why Srila Prabhupada works so hard to establish the centers of Krishna consciousness. So she goes on. Oh, let me give you the next one here.
Tata padamahamsanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yoga vadhanartam katam pasyemi histriyaha.
You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Although Kunti, this is from the purport I paraphrased, although Kunti pleads inability to know Krishna in this verse, and although Srila Prabhupada states in the purport that women generally can't, quote, speculate like philosophers, Prabhupada also says that women have an advantage over men generally, and that they often, quote, offer obeisances without reservation to the Lord, whereas the dry speculators don't. Prabhupada alludes to Brahma's famous prayer about Krishna's mercy being necessary to know him. In chapter 14, Lord Brahma, who's the most intelligent person in the universe, he pleads that he couldn't understand Krishna. You remember he stole Krishna's calves and boys in order to test Krishna's supremacy. So there he says, in his prayers in chapter 14, Atapite deva padam bhajadvaya prashara leshanugi ita hevihi janati tattvam bhagavan mahimno nichanya eko picharam vichinvan. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Lord are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So this is a very important verse. And next Kunti remembers Krishna in his different pastimes. Let's see. Krishnaya Vasudevaya, Devaki Nandanaya cha, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudeva, the pleasure of Devaki, the boy of Nanda, and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and the senses. Though unapproachable by the materialists, Krishna himself descends, so that his devotees can approach him. Prabhupada points out that Kunti is especially recognizing that Krishna, in his original form, is even more approachable than the other incarnations like Ram. Here, Kunti is recalling her special relationship as Krishna's aunt by addressing Krishna as Vasudev and Devaki Nandana, since it is because Kunti is Vasudev's sister that she is Krishna's aunt, or aunt. The supermost attractive aspect of Krishna is his enacting his sports in Brajabhumi, which Kunti recalls with the names Nanda Gopakumar and Govinda. Okay. Namak Pangata Nabhaya, Namak Pangata Maline, Namak Pangata Netraya, Namaste Pankajangraye. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. Srila Prabhupada points out in his purport that although the usual procedure is to offer obeisances to the Lord's feet and then begin meditating on the thighs, waist, and face, here, Kunti doesn't want to embarrass Krishna, because superficially, she's in a superior position as his aunt, and aunts don't bow to the feet of their nephews. So she begins at the waist, then goes to the chest with the garland of lotuses, then to the face, lotus eyes, and finally bows to the lotus feet. Quote, in the round, Srila Prabhupada says, everything there is in order. This is very charming. Going on. Okay. Yata Rishi Kesha Kalena Devaki Kamsena Rudha Ticharam Susharpita Vimochitaham Chasamatma Javibho Trayai Vanati Namahur Vipadganat. O Rishikesh, master of the senses and lord of lords, you have released your mother Devaki, who was long imprisoned and distressed by the envious King Kamsa, and me and my children from a series of constant dangers. In this and the next verse, Kunti recalls the difficulties she, her children, the Pandavas, and Devaki underwent, but was saved from by Krishna. In the purport, Prabhupada points out that because Kunti's husband, Pandu, was gone, Kunti was helpless without her sons, and so Krishna saved them. Whereas Devaki had her husband to protect her, and so her first six sons were taken from her. In this sense, Kunti was more fortunate than Devaki. Quote, the conclusion is that Krishna endows more favor to a devotee who is in great dangers. Sometimes he puts his pure devotees in such dangers because in that condition of helplessness, the devotee becomes more attached to the Lord. The more the attachment is there for the Lord, the more success is there for the devotee. This is a good line to repeat. The more the attachment is there for the Lord, the more the success is there for the devotee. So this involves the great dangers, and she will recall more in the next verse. And then after that, she has this amazing prayer that the dangers will continue. But think of the implication now for ourselves. Now, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, of course, doesn't seek out dangers. But we find out that devotees who take an extra effort to spread Krishna consciousness by taking on further burden on themselves, they get more mercy from the Lord. Because in that situation, then you have to call out more desperately for Krishna. Any Sankirtan devotee will tell you that success of any kind only comes when you constantly pray. If you're going out there with some kind of superior attitude, nobody will stop even. What to speak of, take a book. But it's that feeling of helplessness in the sea of Maya with only the Lord as one's shelter that really Krishna empowers you and inspires people to respond. So the same thing is here. She will recount some of these dangers and then pray that, oh, this is how we saw your lotus feet. So please continue the dangers. So for the next verse, she continues to recount some of these difficulties.
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanad Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Kritchataha Mrde Mrde Neka Mahavatastrato Dhraun Yastratas Chasmahari Virakshita.
My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. So as I mentioned, just before this Brahmastra had been thrown by Ashwatthama, the wicked son of Dronacharya, and he was trying to annihilate the last descendant of the Pandavas, because all their five sons of Draupadi had been killed, and there were going to be no more issues. So Bricket was the last descendant. So Krishna went in the womb and he protected that embryo from this incredible weapon of the Brahmastra. So she's recalling that now. Okay, now this amazing prayer, one of the ones often quoted, there's four or five that are quoted all the time. Srila Prabhupada quoted, Vibhadaksan tatakshasva tatra tatra jaganguro bhavato darshanam yaksyad apanar bhavadarshanam. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Through all the dangers Kunti and her sons went through, they depended on Krishna and prayed to him for protection. And he did so, as we counted in the previous two verses. But now, with the battle won, he was leaving them for Dwarka. Kunti shows her purity by praying for the calamities to return, because that would induce the intense, helpless prayer that invokes Krishna's mercy to the highest degree and produces constant remembrance of his lotus feet. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes Shukadeva's famous statement to Parikit that after Brahma's prayers in chapter 14 of the 10th canto. Some of you may know this verse. Samashritaye padapallavaplavam mahatpadam punyasho marare bhavambudi vatsapadam parampadam padam padam yad vipadam natesham. For those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint. Their goal is Parampadam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, not the place where there is danger at every step. Suffering is unavoidable in this world. Tolerate it, call out constantly to Krishna, and go back to Vaikuntha, the place of no danger or anxiety. This is Prabhupada's, the summary of Prabhupada's purport. Next verse is also often quoted, very important verse for us, all of us. Janmaishraya Shruta Shribhir Enamana Madakpuman Naiva Hatya Vidhatum Vai Pamakinchanagocharam. My Lord, your lordship can easily be approached, but only by those who are material exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education, and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. From the purport, Prabhupada says, by possessing all these material assets, one becomes artificially puffed up, intoxicated by such temporary possessions. Consequently, such materially puffed up persons are incapable of uttering the holy name of the Lord by addressing him feelingly. O Govinda, O Krishna. It is said in the Shastras that by once uttering the holy name of the Lord, the sinner gets rid of a quantity of sins that he is unable to commit. Such is the power of uttering the holy name of the Lord. There's not the least exaggeration in this statement. But there is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. A materially puffed up person may utter the holy name of the Lord occasionally, but he is incapable of uttering the name in quality. Therefore, the four principles of material advancement, namely high parentage, good wealth, high education, attractive beauty, are, so to speak, disqualifications for progress on the path of spiritual advancement. Just to point out one thing, this word abhidhatam, naiva hartu abhidhatam vayal, abhidhatam literally means to call out. So one who is intoxicated with these opulences cannot call out to the Lord with deep feeling. Now this brings us back to the earlier discussion on dainya. You remember that discussion on dainya, that the greatest devotees feel themselves to be helpless, neglected, in need of the Lord's shelter at every moment. And this informs their prayers and how they call on the Lord. And so this is actually the ideal as shown by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. And we see that Kunti is understanding that. So she's praying here, the previous verse, that let us have those dangers, because in those dangers we feel completely helpless and dependent upon you. And we call upon you and you actually appear before us. So cultivating that sense of dependence on Krishna is one of the essential aspects of surrender. And she expands on that in the next verse. Namo kinchana vittaya nivritta gunavrittaye atma ramaya shantaya kaivalya pataye namaha. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are master of the monas. Devotees renounce material attachments for the treasure of the Lord. From the purport, Prabhupada says, quote, the devotees are generally without material prosperity, but they have a very secret treasure house in the lotus feet of the Lord. So Prabhupada tells in summary this story of Sanatan and his Chintamani jewel. So I'll just recount it for you. We referred to it earlier. That it is said that one gentleman once heard about a great sage living in Vrindavan who had a tremendous treasure, and that he was amenable to sharing that treasure. And of course, it was a little unclear, so he traveled to Vrindavan. He was hoping to get some boon, benediction. And he had heard that there was this thing called the Philosopher's Stone or the Chintamani gem that he had. So he went there to Vrindavan, and he encountered Sanatan Goswami serenely chanting the holy name in seclusion. But he was available for darshan. So he respectably offered his obeisances to Dandabhats and waited, and Sanatan asked him if he could help him. And the man recounted the story, and he said, oh, Prabhu, I've heard that you have this Chintamani gem, you have this philosopher's stone, and I was wondering if I could just see it, you know. And so Sanatan said, yeah, sure. It's over there in that little ditch where we keep all of the old leaf plates that we eat on. You know, in India where they have the leaf plates and they throw them away. So you can go there and you can find it there. So he went there and he dug through the leaf plates, and sure enough, there was this Chintamani jewel, and he picked it out. He said, well, I wonder why he's keeping it there. But he said, this is wonderful. He tried it out in a couple of stones, and sure enough, they turned to gold. And he said, oh, this is wonderful. And so Sanatan said, okay, you like it so much, you can have it. The man was overjoyed. He thought, this is incredible. What a magnanimous soul, you know. So he started on his way, and he got maybe a kilometer. And then he thought, wait a minute. He's given me this Chintamani jewel, which is, you know, he kept it in a place of refuse. He must have something even more valuable. Maybe he'll give me that also. So he went back. He went to offered his base, and done the bus, waited till Sanatan had finished his round. And Sanatan said, yes, can I help you? He said, I was wondering if you threw this Chintamani, if you were keeping the Chintamani gem in the refuse pile, you must have something even more valuable. I was wondering if you could show me that. And so Sanatan says, yes, I have something more valuable, but if you want to, I can give it to you. But first you have to follow my instructions. And he says, okay, what is that? You have to take that Chintamani jewel and throw it into the middle of the Yamuna River. So just like with Magari, this is the moment of truth, right? Magari had to break his bow, and this man had to give up the Chintamani jewel, having faith that Sanatan was a man of his word and he had something even more valuable. So he looked at the jewel, looked at Sanatan, looked at the jewel, looked at Sanatan, and then he threw the jewel into the river, and he offered his dandavats and said, yes, Swamiji. So then, of course, he initiated into the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra, and he became a great devotee. So the idea is that if we are, that Krishna is the property of the propertyless. That's what this akinchana vittaya nivritta. What is it? Nivritta guna vittaya, or kinchana vittaya, the property of those who claim no material property. So this is a very important point, and Prabhupada gives some examples of unnecessary things that we should become detached from. Now listen, he's writing in 1960, so listen to part of his list here. In the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at the cost of 50 cents. Right here in the Bhagavatam purport. And there are so many unwanted things which are all products of the material conception of life. Is that any less true today? It's more true today. The attempt to reach the moon is another example of spoiling the energy, because even if the moon is reached, the problems of life will not be solved. The devotees of the Lord are called akinchanas because they have practically no material assets. Such material assets are all products of the three modes of nature. They foil spiritual energy, and thus the less we possess such products of material nature, the more we have a good chance for spiritual progress. The less we possess means the less we're attached to them. We may have so much material assets, but if we use them in the service of the Lord, then that proves that we're not attached to them. It's the attachment. That's close quote. As Krishna is above the modes, so are his pure devotees. Nivritta guna vrittiye. Prabhupada contrasts the pure devotees, whose only property is the Lord, with mixed devotees who approach the Lord for some material reason. So this is a recurring point throughout the Bhagavatam, that there's no admixture. There should be no admixture in our motivation for approaching the Lord, simply to serve him for his pleasure. Okay, next. And she goes on.
Manye tvam kalam ishanam anadi nidanam vibhum samam chadantam savatra bhutanam yanma takkilhi takkalihi.
My Lord, I consider your Lordship to be eternal time, the supreme controller, without beginning and end, the all-pervasive one. In distributing your mercy, you are equal to everyone. The dissensions between living beings are due to social intercourse. As the Paramatma, Krishna sees all our past good and bad deeds, and he rewards us accordingly in the course of time. But he himself is impartial. So this impartiality is brought out in the Bhagavad Gita. We'll read in the next verse.
Na veda kaschin bhagavans chikirshitam taveha manasya nirnam vidambanam na yasya kaschid dahitosti karhichid dveshyas che yasmin vishama matir nirnam.
O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be human and are so misleading. You have no specific object of favor, nor do you have any object of envy. People only imagine that you are partial. So this famous verse from Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sabhabhuteshu Namedveshu Sinapriya Yeva Jandi Tamam Bhaktya Mayite Teshu Chapyaham. I envy no one, says Krishna, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I am also a friend to him. This is a very important understanding on our part, that Krishna is like emanating mercy and kindness and grace and love to everybody. In the spiritual world, they experience it in full because they haven't turned their back on Krishna. Their acceptance of Krishna's supremacy. So they are in the constitutional position as his servants, friends, etc. But a few of us, a minority, have turned away from Krishna, forgotten him, and so in our many, many lives that we lead in all these different species, there seems to be all of these distinctions. Such a person is, one person is born in with the proverbial a silver spoon in their mouth, another child is born to very poor parents, or in the course of our lives, someone comes down with a disease, someone doesn't, someone passes his test, someone doesn't. You see, it seems like there's all of the, either it's good luck, or God is there, but he's, just by chance, he throws the dice. You know, there's no real reason behind it. Because we can't see the great history of our lives that we've gone through for millions and millions of lifetimes. So all we need to do, just like to get the benediction of the sun, you just go outside, you see? And the sun is shining everywhere. You see? We can't complain that the sun is not showing me any mercy because I'm hiding in the corner of my room. So the same is there with Krishna. That if we approach him in the proper way, in the proper means, then we'll feel his blessings. His blessings will come upon us. He assures us of that. And what seems to be partiality is really not. It is simply that the demons and those who are against him cannot experience that grace of his. So Kunti is expressing that. And then now some verses about the bewildering quality of the Lord, because he seems to be partial. Janma karma cha vishvatman adyasya kartur atmanaha adyasya kartur tiryan rishishu yaraksu tad atyanta vidambanam. Of course it is bewildering, O soul of the universe, that you work though you are inactive, and that you take birth, though you are the vital force and are unborn. You yourself descend amongst animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Verily, this is bewildering. The Lord's leelas seem to be contradictory. In the Upanishads, there's this verse some of you may be familiar with. There's a lot of this in the Upanishads. Apaniparo javanagrahita pasyatya chakshu sasanotya karna Saveti vedyam nachatasya veta tamahur agyam purusham puranam. He has no feet or hands, yet he is the swiftest runner and can grasp anything. Though without eyes or ears, he sees and hears everything. Nobody knows him, yet he is the knower and the object of knowledge. Sages describe him as the supreme original personality of Godhead. And again, this verse of Brahma's is important. Atapi te deva padambuja dvaya. That without a little mercy of the Lord, one cannot understand him. If one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Lord are unable to know him, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Then one more prayer from Brahma. Now Brahma's prayers are so significant because he is the most intelligent person in the universe. And he tried to understand Krishna, penetrate the mystery by the strength of his intelligence, and he was defeated. So his advice here, this very important verse, is to give up trying to understand Krishna that way. Jnane priyasam udapasyanamam daeva jivanti sanmukaditam bhavadiya vartam stane stita shudigatam tanavan manobir ye prayaso ajitajito pisitai strilokyam. Now in this last line, he has one of these paradoxical phrases. Krishna is ajita. He can't be conquered, but in this way I just described, you can conquer him. So where is that? The logic. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge, and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. So this is how we can know Krishna, by hearing from qualified souls. Now she's recounting some more bewildering activities on a more personal level. Yate dashasu kalilanjana sambramaksham. Vaktram naniya vayabhavana yasti tasya. Samam vimohe yati bir apiyan vibheti. My dear Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed away the mascara from your eyes. And you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. Now, I wanted to read extensively from this purport, because it's so attractive. It's so charming, the way Prabhupada describes these childhood leela. Here is a specific example of Krishna's being the supreme and at the same time a plaything in the presence of his pure devotee. The Lord's pure devotee renders service unto the Lord out of unalloyed love only, and while discharging such devotional service, the pure devotee forgets the position of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord also accepts the loving service of his devotees more relishably when the service is rendered spontaneously out of pure affection without anything of reverential admiration. Generally, the Lord is worshipped by the devotees in a reverential attitude, but the Lord is meticulously pleased when the devotee, out of pure affection and love, considers the Lord to be less important than himself. The Lord's pastimes in the original abode of Goloka Vrindavan are exchanged in that spirit. The friends of Krishna consider him one of them. They do not consider him to be of reverential importance. The parents of the Lord, who are all pure devotees, consider him a child only. The Lord accepts the chastisements of the parents more cheerfully than the prayers of the Vedic hymns. Similarly, he accepts the reproaches of his fiancées more palatably than the Vedic hymns. When Lord Krishna was present in this material world to manifest his eternal pastimes of the transcendental realm of Goloka Vrindavan as an attraction for the people in general, he displayed a unique picture of subordination before his foster mother, Yashoda. The Lord, in his naturally childish, playful activities, used to spoil the stock butter of Mother Yashoda by breaking the pots and distributing the contents to his friends and playmates, including the celebrated monkeys of Vrindavan, who took advantage of the Lord's munificence. Mother Yashoda saw this, and out of her pure love, she wanted to make a show of punishment for her transcendental child. She took a rope and threatened the Lord that she would tie him up, as is generally done in the ordinary household. Seeing the rope in the hands of his mother, Yashoda, the Lord bowed down his head and began to weep just like an ordinary child, and tears rolled down his cheeks, washing off the black ointment smeared about his beautiful eyes. This picture of the Lord is adored by Kunti Devi because she is conscious of the Lord's supreme position. He is feared often by fear personified, yet he is afraid of his mother, who wanted to punish him just in an ordinary manner. Kunti was conscious of the exalted position of Krishna, whereas Yashoda was not. Therefore, Yashoda's position was more exalted than Kunti's. Mother Yashoda got the Lord as a child, and the Lord made her forget altogether that her child was the Lord himself. If Mother Yashoda had been conscious of the exalted position of the Lord, she would certainly have hesitated to punish the Lord. But she was made to forget this situation because the Lord wanted to make a complete gesture of childishness before the affectionate Yashoda. This exchange of love between the mother and the son was performed in a natural way, and Kunti, remembering the scene, was bewildered, and she could do nothing but praise the transcendental filial love. Indirectly, Mother Yashoda is praised for her unique position of love, for she could control even the all-powerful Lord as her beloved child. So this is one of the wonderful qualities of Krishna you don't find in any other incarnation, where he allows his devotees, first of all, he displays this all-attractive, sweet nature of his childhood aspect in Vrindavan, so that his devotees can enter into these amazing relationships of a friend, parent, and even lover. And then this, forget all about his majesty and power to have this these highest relationships with the Lord. That's only there in Krishna's Goloka Vrindavan Leela. And so Kunti is remembering that, and she's endeared to that, because she also has filial love for Krishna, or rather parental love, but it's diluted, if you will, compromised, because she understands his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kechid ahur ajam jatam punya shloka sikirtaye yado priyasyan vavaye malayasye vachandanam. Some say that the unborn is born for the glorification of pious kings, and others say that he is born to please King Yadu, one of your dearest devotees. You appear in his family as sandalwood appears in the Malaya hills. This verse is the first of several in which Kunti enumerates the various speculations as to why Krishna advents. Now, this thing of appearing in the Malaya hills, Prabhupada explains it that there are many different hills that the sandalwood could grow on, but it happens to grow on the Malaya Hills, and therefore it's known as the Malayan sandalwood, because it's known there. So Krishna could appear in any family, but because he appeared in the family of the Yadus, he's known as a Yadava, you see. But he's independent. He can appear in different families, and does so in different incarnations. Okay, we'll go on here. She, several verses here that she recounts some speculations as to why Krishna appears. Apade vasudevasya devakyam yachito vigat adastramasya chemaya vidhaya chasuratvisham. Others say that since both Vasudev and Devaki prayed for you, you have taken your birth as their son. Undoubtedly you are unborn, yet you take your birth for their welfare and to kill those who are envious of the demigods. All right, going on, since these are all of a piece here. Okay. Bharavataranayanye Bhuvonavahivodadhau Siddhantya Bhuri Bharena Jato Yatma Bhuvartitaha. Others say that the world, being overburdened like a boat at sea, is much aggrieved, and that Brahma, who is your son, prayed for you, and so you have appeared in order to diminish the trouble. The Lord appears for many reasons, and this is one of them. You know, from Bhagavad Gita, he explains, Yada Yadahi Dharma, so when there's an upsurge of Dharma, and Dharma is eclipsed, that time I come in order to protect the devotees, reestablish Dharma, and annihilate the miscreants. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's another reason described, where it says, Anugrahaya Bhaktanam Manusham Deham Astitaha Bhajate Tadvishi Grida Yashruta Tatparo Bhavet. Out of his compassion for the devotees. Now remember that we're so fortunate, because we're living now just a mere 5,000 years after Krishna appeared on this planet, and a mere 500 after Lord Chaitanya. But how often does Krishna appear? Who knows? Yes. One, not a whole life. Once in a day, Brahma. Once in a day of Brahma. So Brahma's 12 hours are 4,320,000,000 years. And then he has another 12 hours that he sleeps. So that's over 8 billion years. That's how long. Once every 8 billion years. So what is 5,000 compared to that? Not even the snap of a finger. So we're practically contemporaries to Krishna. So how fortunate we are. You know, Krishna has come to renew. Because after some time, the remembrance of his leela begins to attenuate. This is what happens with the force of time. So just see, Krishna has just appeared. Vrindavan, you can go to Vrindavan. He was right there. The dust is still there. Some of the dust when he was walking is still there. You can, right? You can get that dust. So this is we're extremely fortunate. And he comes, but he comes periodically to renew the remembrance of his lila. So then hearing those pastimes, one will become dedicated to him. Is he? Will become enlivened by hearing the pastimes. That's another reason for him coming, for the devotees specifically. Now here's another one Prabhupada would quote a lot. Bhavesmin klishyamananam avidya kama karma bihi shavana smarana hani kadishyan iti kechana. And yet others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation. And this is exactly that other reason, you see. Prabhupada says in the purport that in this age, the incarnation who revives the service centered on hearing and chanting is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, and now the next verse, you see, this is a... I love this verse. It's one of the first verses I ever memorized. Oh no, I'm sorry. Oh my goodness, did I skip one here? Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, I'll read this one myself. Some of you may know it. Shunvanti gayanti granantna bhikshnasa. Very good. Smaranti nandanti tavehi tangjana. Ta eva pasyant achirena tavakam. Bhava pravaho padamam padambujam. O Krishna, those who continuously hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental activities, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly very quickly see your lotus feet, which alone can stop the repetition of birth and death. How to see Krishna? Prabhupada explains. Quote, the Supreme Lord Krishna cannot be seen by our present conditional vision. In order to see him, one has to change his present vision by developing a different condition of life full of spontaneous love of Godhead. Close quote. Hearing and chanting are the main processes for changing our vision, but the hearing has to be from the right source. Also, we have to hear of the Lord's lila in their entirety, not favoring any one, because they are all absolute. In other words, Krishna's dealing with the Pandavas are just as transcendental as his dealings with the gopis. So, this phrase at the end, bhava pravaho padamam padambujam, is very telling. Bhava pravaha is the flow, the river. Just imagine like we're in a river, a fast-moving river that we can't get onto the shore. That's called, bhava means birth and death. Birth and death. We're caught in this tide, this very powerful river. But here it says, upadamam. It stops. It stops this river. Now what is it that stops? The vision of his lotus feet. Padambujam. By seeing his lotus feet, getting a realization of Krishna, then our liberation is assured. That's the whole idea. So it comes from hearing and singing, gayanti, accepting and taking pleasure in hearing of Krishna's pastimes. Ihitam means his activities. So we should cultivate that. This is one of his pastimes. Hearing of this interaction with Kunti is part of it. And now the one that I have there, unfortunately I missed one. Yes. Apyadyanastvam svakrate hitaprabho jihasasi svit sudido nujivinaha yesham nachanyad bhavatak padambujat Parayanam Rajasu Yojitang Hasam. O my Lord, you have executed all duties yourself. Are you leaving us today? Though we are completely dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us, now when all kings are at enmity with us? So now she's coming to the end of her prayers and she's starting to express her own specific desires. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, the highest achievement of perfect civilization is to work with valor, but at the same time depend completely on the Lord. Close quote. Dependence on the Lord at every second is a fact, but the fools and the demons deny this dependence and stay bound up by material nature. Then again from the purport. For the Pandavas, separation from the Lord was just like the separation of a fish from water. Srimati Kunti Devi, therefore, felt such separation like a thunderbolt, and the whole prayer of the queen is to try to persuade the Lord to stay with them. After the battle of Kurukshetra, although the inimical kings were killed, their sons and grandsons were still there to deal with the Pandavas. It is not only the Pandavas who were put into the condition of enmity, but all of us are always in such a condition. And the best way of living is to become completely dependent on the will of the Lord and thereby overcome all difficulties of material existence. So, this is, Queen Kunti here is beginning to express her own, you know, personal desires. Is that it's a very poignant scene. You know, Krishna's protected him through all of these years of dangers, impossible dangers, the burning house. She recounted them already. You know, even the battle, they were outnumbered. They were, you know, it seemed like a hopeless match. And yet Krishna brought them through, you know, and he kept his word, protected them through all of this. So now the battle's over. Now Krishna's leaving. And she's beside herself because she's a devotee. She wants to have the darshan of Krishna. So she's pleading with him to stay. This is what's going on here. Okay. And next. Kevayam nama rupabhyam yadubi sahapandava bhavato darshanam yahi vishikhanam viveshituhu. As the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the disappearance of the spirit soul, a living spirit, similarly, if you do not look upon us, all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and Yadus, will end at once. From the purport, without the guidance of Lord Krishna, all of the Pandavas are non-entities, as much as the senses of the body are useless without the guidance of consciousness. No one should be proud of his prestige, power, and fame without being guided by the favor of the Supreme Lord. The living beings are always dependent, and the ultimate dependable object is the Lord Himself. So this is true for all of us as well. Our lives actually have no meaning without Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's just Macbeth, a tale told by an idiot, strutting and fretting his time upon the stage. I guess people don't read Shakespeare so much. Right? He had that much right, Shakespeare, but he didn't know how you could make the tale actually mean something. That's Krishna consciousness, you see? Without that, then no matter what you do, with philanthropy, making money, learning this, doing that, it's all just bubbles in the ocean. The only thing that's real is Krishna and the spirit. The spirit is reality. Nasato vijate bhava. We should be fully convinced of that. So these prayers of Kunti are expressing that. If we're bereft of you, we have our bodies, our kingdom doesn't mean anything. Of course, in separation, you can still be Krishna conscious. That's the idea. She was, you know, expressing that. And at the end, she'll say, okay, fine. As long as my mind can always think of you and my love can be directed to you, then that'll be success. So we're almost finished with the prayers now. And if we have time, I don't know if we have any time, we can discuss them, some of them. Okay. Neyam sobishyate tatra yate danim gadadara tvatpadayat ankitabati solakshana vilakshitai. O Gadadhar, Krishna, our kingdom is now being marked by the impressions of your feet, and therefore it appears beautiful. But when you leave, it will no longer be so. So this is the same mood as the previous one. We'll go on in the interest of saving time. Ime janapada sridha. Uh-oh. Oh, now another one I left out. I am so sorry. Okay, I'll read this for myself. Supakshvaushadi viruda vanadri nadyudhanvanto yedante tavavikshitai. All these cities and villages are flourishing in all respects because the herbs and grains are in abundance, the trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, the hills are full of minerals, and the oceans are full of wealth. And all this is due to your glancing over them. From the purport, human prosperity flourishes by natural gifts and not by gigantic industrial enterprises. The gigantic industrial enterprises are products of a godless civilization, and they cause the destruction of the noble aims of human life. The more we go on increasing such troublesome industries to squeeze out the vital energy of the human being, the more there will be unrest and dissatisfaction of the people in general, although a few only can live lavishly by exploitation. This was written about 50 years ago, and you can see it is spot on now and will always be so. You know, this expanding of industry everywhere in India, in China, in America, is just causing tremendous anxiety to everybody, and polluting the atmosphere, ruining the air, water, ether, the land, everything. So simple living, high thinking is the way to go. Whoops, that was the one we were on. Atavishvesha vishvatman vishramurtesh vakeshume snehapasam imam chindi dudham pandushu vrishnishu. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please therefore sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. So here we get at the end. Shri Kishore Kishori ki jai, Shri Gornatai ki jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadraji ki jai. So this is the third from the end of her prayers, and she's now actually asking for something. She never actually said to Krishna, will you please stay here? You just stay here, you know. She was saying, are you going now? Are you going now? Now she's actually asking something that Krishna will fulfill. And that is cutting her ties of affection. Here is the first of Kunti's actual prayers. Kunti is sensing that with the battle won and Krishna about to leave for Dwaraka, she would not see Krishna again. Without the dangers she and her sons faced before, her affectionate ties to her family might become an impediment to her Krishna consciousness. At least she is displaying this mood to us for our enlightenment. Just as Prahlad in his prayers, remember we were saying, oh, my senses are going all over the place. So, it's for our enlightenment. Same thing is here with Kunti. In the purport, Prabhupada talks about how the great preachers like the six Goswamis broke their family ties for the good of the world. Quote, a pure devotee cuts off the limited ties of affection for his family and widens his activities of devotional service for all forgotten souls. So this is why we honor the sannyasis who actually are renounced and travel widely simply to enlighten others. It's an austerity in the service of the Lord, but it's taking the club, you know, if you will, at Nanda on the battlefield of this world, and really being a fully surrendered soul, and they get great mercy from the Lord for that. So this is difficult for her. The Pandavas and the Vrishnis are right there. Her sons are right there, but she's asking, please cut off this family affection so that everything can be directed to you. And then this, what I consider the heart of the prayers in the next verse, which I hope I didn't forget, put on here. Yeah, this is it. Tvayame nannivishaya matir madupate sakrit rachimun vahataradha gange vaughmudanvati. O Lord of Maru, as the Ganges forever flows to the sea without hindrance, let my attraction be constantly drawn unto you without being diverted to anyone else. Now I'm going to read this purport because it's so telling and it kind of sums up everything. Perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted toward the transcendental loving service of the Lord. To cut off all the ties of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements like affection for someone else. This is not possible. A living being, whoever he may be, must have this feeling of affection for others because this is a symptom of life. The symptoms of life, such as desire, anger, hankerings, feelings of attraction, etc., cannot be annihilated. Only the objective has to be changed. desire cannot be negated, but in devotional service, the desire is changed only for the service of the Lord in place of desire for sense gratification. The so-called affection for family, society, country, etc. consists of different phases of sense gratification. When this desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, it is called devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, we can see that it was just to satisfy his own personal desires that Arjuna refused to fight with his brothers and relations. But when he heard the message of the Lord, the Bhagavad Gita, he changed his decision and served the Lord. And for his doing so, he became a famous devotee of the Lord. For it is declared in all the scriptures that Arjuna attained spiritual perfection by devotional service to the Lord in friendship. The fighting was there, the friendship was there, Arjuna was there, and Krishna was there, but Arjuna became a different person by devotional service. Therefore, the prayers of Kunti also indicate the same categorical changes in activities. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted to serve the Lord without diversion, and that was her prayer. This unalloyed devotion is the ultimate goal of life. Our attention is usually diverted to the service of something, which is non-godly or not in the program of the Lord. I'm sorry, is there some water? Maybe some water. When the program is changed into the service of the Lord, that is to say, when the senses are purified in relation with the service of the Lord, it is called pure unalloyed devotional service. Srimati Kunti Devi wanted that perfection.